Holding on, Kufala from a daze, Marsha. About the
Good
middle of the
morning.
white lines by the two dots. We were talking about yesterday the question of how many dayonim you need for chalitza. We said the Or Mishnah had said three, Rabbi Yehuda and a Braisa said five, and we said in the end, Rabbi Yehuda, it seems, changed his mind and agreed that you need only three. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Srichi dayoni lemikba duchta. The dayonim for chalitza have to arrange in advance a place for the chalitza. As the pasuk says, the yavama should go up to the gate, where the gate in those times was where dayanim would regularly sit, to the skenim. So we see, in other words, the point is that it can't just be the skenim or anywhere; they have to actually arrange in advance a place. All of this has to do with the idea of being mefarsim. We talked about at the end yesterday the idea that we want to publicize the chalitza. For one thing, so people know that she's available, and for another thing, so people know that she's available, and for another thing, so Kohanim know not to marry her. So we do that. This is brought, many of these details that we're saying in the Gemara over here are brought in the Seder Chalitza that's in Shulchan Aruch. And in fact, what it's brought over there is the evening before or the day before. They announce tomorrow we're going to be doing the chalitza in such and such a place, and they go and sit there, and then that's the official place for the chalitza. So the Gemara says, Rav Papa v'Rav Huna b'Rebbi Rav Yeshua avdi uvda b'chamisha. Now Rav Papa and Rav Huna b'Rebbi Rav Yeshua, in practice, when they supervise the chalitza, they would have five dayan. So the Gemara says, command Rav Yehuda. So what is that like Rav Yehuda that we said before? B'ha-hadabe. Didn't we say Rabbi Yehuda changed his mind and said that you don't need five after all? And the answer is again, lafar sumim milsa, in order to publicize it. So Rashi says, again, both reasons. Number one, that she's a chalutza, and so that she doesn't marry a kohen. And number two, so that people know that she's available. Now, I mean, Achronim point out, I mean, the same two things could apply conceivably to a get as well. Nevertheless, since the pasuk makes a point only by chalitza of saying va'olsi v'imte ashaira, is why. So the Aruch HaNer in fact explains this is why. So what we were talking about the five people. Then we digress to talking about this matter of making of setting up a specific place for the chalitza, and now we're going back to having the five people. Why is it in that order? Because the point is that we're saying only because the Torah says by chalitza that it has to be publicized. Therefore, that is why we need to be kaveh makom, and that is also why uniquely by chalitza we need five people. Even though, yeah, logically the same reasons ought to apply to giving a get as well, but the fact is the Torah didn't say any such thing by a get. So the Gemara says similarly, Rav Ashi ikol beir Rav Kahana. Rav Ashi one time visited the house of the yeshiva of Rav Kahana. Omalei solik mar legabon lemaluyed bechamisha. So Rav Kahana tells him, "Come join us to make up the five." So again, the idea being that even though in principle you only need three, because the halacha is like the chachamim, in practice you have five in order to be mefarsim. And similar, the Omer of Kahana, Habakkah Kamed of Yehuda. Rav Kahana in turn says, whether it's the same Rav Kahana or not is not so certain. There were six or seven Rav Kahanas in Shas, but whatever. He says, Habakkah Kamed of Yehuda. I was standing in front of Rav Yehuda as a Talmud, but Omeli, and he tells him, Tosak Lazirza Dakoni, come up, Lazirza Dakoni, to the bundle of sticks. To join with the five. So Rashi says that it means that there was a place where there were bundles of sticks, and that was the place where they had decided they were going to do the chalitza. Another possibility is maybe that he means like we ourselves all together will be like a bundle that will together supervise the chalitza. Omruloi, so people asked Rabbi Yehuda, Lomali Chamisha, why do you need five? And he answered, like before, Amalahu Kech de la Faris and Milsa, in order that the matter is publicized. So the Gemara continues, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda have a koi kamed Rav Yehuda. One time Rav Shmuel by Yehuda was standing in front of Rav Yehuda. Now, even though his name is Bar Yehuda, but he's not the son of this Rav Yehuda, he's the son of a different Rav Yehuda, which we'll talk about in a second. So he was standing in front of Rabbi Yehuda. Omalei, and Rabbi Yehuda tells him, like he told Rav Kahana, "Sak tol the zirza dekoni litzdirofe bechamisha lefarsumi milsa. Come join the zirza dekoni, the bundle. Come join us at the bundle of sticks to join together for the five for the five to be mefarsim it." Omalei, but Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda says, "Can't Tanena, we learn in a Braisa that when it says be Yisrael, the Pasuk says a couple of times in those Pesukim, it says be Yisrael, the Nikoshme be Yisrael, based Chalutz HaNoal, and earlier also you have the word be Yisrael. So it means be based in Yisrael, v'loy be based in Shal Gerim, so it can't be accomplished in a based in of Gerim, v'ano ger ano. I, says Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, am a ger. Now, how does he come to be a ger if he has a father's name, Yehuda? So Rashi says he and his father together became ger. Tosfos, in fact, brings those Gemaras and other places that mention someone named Rav Yehuda Hindavar. Now, Hindavar, interestingly, could be related to the word Hindu. So in that case, it could mean that he was from India. Or sometimes in Targum and in other places, sometimes the word Hindavar is sometimes used to mean Ethiopia. So it could mean the guy was from there. Whatever the case, he became a ger. And now we're saying his son of Shmuel bar Yehuda is also a ger because because he also became a ger along with his father. Or another possibility is actually based on the continuation of the Gemara. It might be that both Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda's parents were gerim. He may have been conceived and born after they both became gerim, but nevertheless, he's still considered a ger for this purpose because. So we'll get to that in a little bit. An interesting point in this connection, though, is about there is a machlokus we've shown him on the subject. Now we know, fine, these criteria apply to the three dayanim. But we're saying you need two more dayanim just in order to be mefarsim. Now, those two dayanim, in principle, in terms of it being a din, you don't need them. We're saying you only need them to be mefarsim. And in fact, the Rabbonish term for them, they call them shtumah dayanim, which means like the mute dayanim, the quiet dayanim, because they don't even have to say anything during it, unlike the other three that actually have to tell him the words, like we said before, give him advice, tell him, do you want to do Yibum or Chalitza? The other two are there just in order to make a piercing. Shtumah means mute. It's in Yiddish, Pashtus.
It's in Yiddish.
Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, and in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it brings, in Seder Chalitza, it says that what they would do is they would have them sit opposite the other three in order to show that they're not part of the actual, dayanim. But Amos says that no, they should sit next to the dayanim, like on the side of the bench. And that's how they generally do it nowadays. But in any case, so the question becomes, for sure the three dayanim can't have any of the psulim of dayanim. What about, which means, first of all, it means, as we learned yesterday, they have to at least be a shtickel to men chachamim, but also they can't be relatives of the yavam or the yavama, they can't be relatives of each other, they can't be psulei, they can't be psulei edus, etc. What about the other two? Now, so are we saying over here, sort of Shmuel bar Yehuda is saying that I can't even join as one of the extra two, as one of the shtuma dayanim, because I'm a ger, that would mean that all five of them have to be kosher. So it would mean, in other words, so the other two don't have to be Tamar Chachamim per se, but they at least can't have Psulim. Or does it mean that Rabbi Yehuda wanted him to be one of the actual three, and he's saying I can't because I'm a ger, implying that he could have been one of the other two. So the Machlokas were showing him on that point, whether the Shtum or Dayanim have to have all the qualifications of Dayanim or not. So the Gemara continues, since we're talking about Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Amar Rav Yehuda, Kigoin Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda says, you want to know how much I hold of Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, how reliable and how great he is. Mapikne mamona apume. I would take money from somebody else based on his word. In other words, if he says, on the face of it, it sounds like if Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda comes and says that I know that Reuven owes Shimon money, then Rav Yehuda is saying, I would follow that and I would tell Reuven to pay Shimon. Well, says my picnic sock. What do you mean he would take away money? The fact is, the Torah says you need to aid him. As reliable as Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda may be, you can't override. Didn't Torah with that. Ella, no. What Rav Yehuda said means is, I would consider a shtar to be bad based on his statement. Namely, Rashi says, if let's say Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda were to come to and tell Rav Yehuda, Pliny, Reuven is bringing the shtar to Beis Din, but I happen to know that the shtar has already been paid off, then Rav Yehuda would say, I would follow that, and in fact, I wouldn't collect using that shtar. So because there's a halacha that Rambam brings it, Shulchan Aruch brings it, that in principle, a dayan has a certain amount of latitude to follow his own discretion. In other words, so you have, there's the actual rules of Eidos and Jewish of Hakira and all that. But then you have, sometimes you can have somebody like here, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda would tell him, like kind of off the record, you should know there's something wrong with the shtar, and a dayan is able to follow that and say, you know what, since I know this guy is reliable, then I'm going to follow, and then that tells me there's something fishy over here, and therefore I'm going to declare this shtar possible, or at least Tosfos says, okay, maybe what it would mean is you wouldn't actually say it's possible and like rip it up, but you would tell him you need other proofs, this shtar is not good enough for you to be able to collect with. Now, the Rambam says in practice, after the time of the Gemara, they mostly stopped doing that because the Dayanim themselves, unfortunately, are not so reliable anymore. And you may have sometimes where, you know, they say, yeah, I'm using my discretion, and really they're doing it because they're not quite so honest. But in principle, you could do that, and that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. The friend with the other guy, whatever. The point is that in practice, we don't do this kind of judicial discretion nowadays in halacha, but in the times of the Gemara, they could. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda is an example of such a person.
They have to be very special people.
They have to be, yeah. So in fact, the Aruch HaNer says that's the connection of this with the Gemara over here. Since we're establishing that Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda is so great a Talmid Chacham, then Rav Yehuda wouldn't be telling him, if he's asking him to join the Beis Din for Chalitza, it wouldn't just be as one of the Shtuma Dayanim, it would be as one of the three. And therefore, that would fit better with the Ritvaz, that would fit better with the Ritvaz Shitta, that the Shtuma Dayanim can even be psulim, for example, they could be a ger or what have you. So therefore, so the fact that Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda is saying I'm a ger or the son of a ger or whatever wouldn't prevent him from being one of the two. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying, come on, we don't want you as one of the two. We want you as one of the three. Okay. So the Gemara goes on in this connection. Omar Rabba, ger donas chavera din Torah, dvar Torah, mina Torah, a ger can judge another ger. You should place over yourself a king whom Hashem chooses. And the pasuk continues, from among your brothers, you should place a king over you, implying that only when it's over you, a born Jew, do you have to have that melech. Or in this case, we're talking about a dayan, which is included in melech. Rashi actually brings a pasuk where dayanim are referred to as kings. So if it's alecha, then you have to have mikerev achecha. The person has to be from among the Jewish people and not a ger. Av a ger, donas chaver a ger. However, one ger could judge another ger. Now Rashi explains we're talking about even dinim mominus. If we're talking even dinim nefoshes, Rashi says dinim mominus, a ger would anyway be able to judge other born Jews. On the other hand, Tosfos and many other Rishonim disagree with Rashi on that and say that no, we're talking about even dinim mominus over here, a ger cannot be regularly judging Yisrael. So some of the Rishonim say maybe like on an occasional basis he could, but not as a regular thing. But we're saying over here, if the person who's being judged as a ger, or in the case of dinim mominus, if the two people involved are gerim, then yes, a ger would be able to judge. And continues, v'im hoise imem Yisrael, if we're talking about a ger where he himself is not a ger, but his father is a ger and his mother is a born Jew, dona fili Yisrael, then he would be able to judge even actual Jews. But when it comes to chalitza, you have to have that both his father and his mother have to be born Jews. Shenemav nikra shmei b'Yisrael, because the pasuk says over there, v'nikra shmei b'Yisrael, meaning that there has to be, as Rashi says, Yisrael mikol tzdadin. He has to be from every direction, he has to be a Yisrael. So Tosfos says that actually that's not exactly what it means. What it means is, as long as his father is a Yisrael, then we don't really care whether his mother is a Gioris. So in the case of Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda before, so again, we could say that it means, like Rashi said, that he actually became a ger along with his father, in which case he's a full ger, or it could be that we're saying that his father, Rav Yehuda, had become a ger, and then afterwards Rav Shmuel was conceived and born. Nevertheless, since his father is a ger, so then his, even if his mother was a born Jew, even if Rabbi Yehuda Hindava had married a born Jewish woman, then it still wouldn't be enough for Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda to be a dayan for chalitza. So in practice, I mean, there are different opinions about it. And in Shulchan Aruch, it says that the best thing is make sure that they have both parents are Jews. If one of the parents is a ger, then you start getting into the questions that you have over here, whether they're kosher for chalitza. And again, that's as far as the three. And then you have a further machlokas whether such people are kosher for the other two.
You could apply that to any din Torah. Why just chalitza?
Because by chalitza specifically, it says b'yisrael, the mikvah shema b'yisrael. So we're saying, on the one hand, you have the pasuk soim tosim alecha melech, and we learn from that that it means, as Rashi says, not only a melech but also a dayan, and you also have b'chlal. You have a whole side issue over there that the Gemara mentions elsewhere that it means not only a rav, not only a melech has to be from among Jews, but also kol mesimus shatam mason. Any position of authority has to be mekarev achecha. So the question becomes also how much authority. What do we consider exactly is considered the level of authority of a dayan, such that we should say he has to be mekarev achecha. So Tosfos refers over here briefly to a longer Tosfos that they have earlier in the Masechta when we had the whole sugya over there about Ovid Kachavim ve'Eved Abba Bas Yisrael, whether a Vlad Kosher, whether a Vlad Mamzer, and we mentioned over there the case of Mori Bar Rochel, whose father was a Goy and whose mother was a Yid. So Tosfos discusses at some length over there this question of what exactly a Ger can and can't do in terms of judging other people. So again, Rashi says over here that he can judge dinim mominus, there's no problem. Only dinim nefashis are we restricting him to judging geirim, whereas Tosfos disagrees and says even dinim mominus, there are restrictions on that. Okay, so now that we've talked about the qualifications for the dayanim and the number of dayanim, now let's talk about the actual footwear that we use for the chalitza. So the Gemara starts off, Omer Rabba, Omer Rav Kahana, Omer Rav. Im yobe Eliyahu v'yomer chiltzin meminho. If Eliyahu HaNavi were to come and tell us, and keep in mind, I mean, Eliyahu HaNavi, on the one hand, he has the power of Nevuah, but on the other hand, he also is a Talmid Chacham. So if he's telling us as a Talmid Chacham, if he were to tell us, Chiltzin Mimino, you're allowed to do Chalitza with a shoe, Shoymin Loi, then we would listen to him, but Ein Chiltzin B'Sandal, Ein Shoymin Loi. But if he tells us, you're not allowed to do Chalitza with a sandal, then we don't listen to him, Chikran Noagro on B'Sandal, because people already have the minhag of using a sandal. Now, we learned in the Mishnah, we said that the sandal has to have an okev, it has to have a Rashi had said there that it meant a sole. Other Rishonim talk about that it means a heel, whatever. The Mishnah had said that if you use this, so the Mishnah had said that if you use a minol chalitzosik shera and besandol, if it has an okev, then it's kosher. Now, what the difference is between a minol and a sandal is one of the big issues that the Rishonim discuss in our sugya over here. One point is that they discuss that a minol is made out of softer leather and a sandal is made out of harder leather. Another point that some of them make is that a minol covers the top and the bottom of the foot. It's more like our shoes, whereas a sandal covers primarily only the bottom of the foot. And then you have laces or whatever on top of the straps and laces and things on top to hold it in place. So right now we're saying that since the minhag is to use a sandal, then therefore, even if Eliyahu were to come and tell us that you can't use a sandal, then nevertheless, we wouldn't listen to him, Shekran Nogo, on the sandal, because people have the minhag to use a sandal. And in fact, the Yerushalmi brings on this, the famous expression, minhag mevatel halacha, that you have some of the people have a minhag to do such and such. So even if Eliyahu were to come with his full power of the knowledge of Torah that he has and tell us that not, then nevertheless, we'd say that on minhag, to use a sandal overrides that. Although the Meiri says, obviously, I mean, you don't say every minhag is mevatel halacha, otherwise, you know, who knows where you're going to get. Abba, the Rishonim sometimes bring something called minhag oisius gehenim. So not every minhag is valid, but nevertheless, you still have sometimes a minhag that actually overrides the technical halacha. Now, so that's one version of the statement. Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Kahana, Amar Rav. Rav Yosef has a different version of the statement also in the name of Rav Kahana, in the name of Rav. If he tells us you don't do chalitza, the opposite of the previous one, if he tells us that you don't do chalitza with a shoe, then shoymin loy, we would listen to him. But if he tells us ein chiltzin b'sandal, ein shoymin loy. But if he tells us that we don't do chalitza with a sandal, then we don't listen to him, shekran nogo on b'sandal, because that's people regularly use sandals for chalitza. So the Gemara says, "My Binayu, what's the actual difference between the two Lashonis?" Now, in the first Lashon, in Rabba's Lashon, he says that if he says Chilt and Minol Shemin Loi, implying that up till now we haven't been using a Minol, but if he tells us you can use a Minol, then we'll go ahead and start doing it. As opposed to, according to the second Lashon, we're saying if he says Ein Chilt and Minol, implying that up until now maybe we've been using a Minol. So Ikka Binayu Minol Lachatchila. So the argument between them would be, can you use a minol? Can you use a shoe, lachatchila, or lachatchila should you be using a sandal and only bidyevet if you use a minol, would it be kosher? Now, one issue with it is, as we go further down the Amud, we're going to discuss some details of how this shoe or the sandal has to be constructed. One problem is that we're not really sure what the sandals of the times of Gemara were like. So for that, and then based on various considerations that we're going to have further down on the Amud about how it describes how it's made, in practice, what we use nowadays for chalitza is much more like a minol than it is like a sandal. So different Rishonim and Achronim talk about different reasons. Well, so we'll have soon one thing that bears on that. But in practice, the shoe that we have nowadays for that purpose is much more like a minol made out of soft leather rather than a sandal, which is made out of hard leather. But to a certain extent, it's constructed in a certain way that it is more like the sandals of the times of the Gemara, as much as possible, given that we don't have actual examples of those sandals to be able to follow. Mefoshim point out, by the way, I mean, in the times of the Gemara, it wasn't, the Bote Dinim didn't usually have a shoe set aside for the purpose. They would just, when it came to Chalitza, they'd have somebody over there take off their shoe and they'd use it right there on the spot. Whereas nowadays, Bote Dinim have a standard shoe that's made according to the specifications that we'll talk about soon that they use for Chalitza. So therefore, one consideration, the Gemara is going to say soon, one reason why not to use a minol is because it might rip. And then you're going to be using a ripped one. But if nowadays they have a standard one, which is used only for chalitza, then there's less of a problem of it being ripped. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Umando amar afilu lachatchila." Now, if you're telling me that you're allowed to use a minol, even lachatchila, shoe, even lachatchila, what do you mean? V'hatinan, but we learned in our Mishnah, chotzam a minol chalitza sekshera. We said, if you did chalitza with a shoe, then the chalitza is kosher, implying di'evid ein lachatchila loy, implying only b'di'evid can use a minol. So according to the first version, that in fact we don't use a minol lachatchila, and we're saying if Eliyahu comes and says you could, then shomin loy, then fine. That we're not really changing from the way we're doing now. Even now we only use a minol b'di'evid, and then if Eliyahu comes and tells us, we also will just use it b'di'evid. But if you say that you're allowed to use it lachatchila, then how does it fit with our Mishnah? The answer is no. Hu adin da'afilu lachatchila. Our Mishnah means you could use a minol even lachatchila, but ayi deboi l'misnei sefer ba'an piyuya chalitzos p'sula. But since the next part of the Mishnah is going to say that if you use an anpulia, which we said is a cloth sock or slipper or something like that, then it would be possible, da'afilu di'evid, and that is possible, even if it was b'di'evid, tonanamiresha di'evid, therefore, earlier it also uses a b'di'evid dikaloshen, but not necessarily to imply, according to that opinion, that you couldn't use a minol lachatchila. So the Gemara continues, a minol lachatchila tanoi. This question of whether you can use a minol lachatchila is actually machlokes tanoim. The Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi, pamachas holachta b'nitzivin. One time I visited Nitzivin, which is a city in the north of Babel, nowadays it's in Turkey. Matsasi zokin achad, I found an old Talmud Chacham over there. Amauti like klumat abaki b'Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. I asked him, are you familiar with Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, who had been the Rav in Nitzivin for many years? Omeli Hain, he says yes, Baal Shulchani who Tadir, and he's regularly by my table. Or Tosfos brings a different girsa from the Yerushalmi that the man says, I was a Shulchani, I was a money changer, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira would regularly come to me for money changing services. So yes, I know him well. So Rabbi Yossi asked him, Klumra Isa Shacholat Biyavama, did you ever see him supervising a Chalitza? Omeli, he says, Re'isi Shacholat, Harepamim, B'mino Oibasandal. Yes, I saw many times where he did chalitza with a minol or with a sandal. Omar Lee. Omar Lee. So Reisa Shacholat Habit Pam. So I asked him, says Rabbi Yosi, the minol over sandal. What did he use? Did he use a I missed that. The minol over sandal. Did he use a minol or did he use a sandal? Omar Lee. So the man answers me. Rabbi Yosi says, Of course, it had to be with a sandal. In the minol. How could you do chalitza with a minol anyway? The Torah afterwards uses the word naloi rather than minoloi. Now, Rashi and Tosfos both take out that phrase, which is why it's in parenthesis, because Rashi points out, it's true that in Divrei Chachamim, there could be a difference between nal and minol. You don't have parenthesis, okay. But in Loshen of Tanakh, you never find the word minol. The word for a shoe is always nal. So it's not like we're saying the Torah could have used the word minol, and that was at the time when the Torah was written, the word minol was not in use.
So the difference between minol and minol.
Well, so that's the thing. So we would understand if we have that girsa, then the word nal would imply something that you put on your foot, but it would mean specifically a sandal, whereas minol would mean a shoe, like the kind like what we're more familiar with as a shoe. Rashi takes out those words, and Tosfos also does. On the other hand, the Orach HaNer finds a reason to justify them. If the Torah had written the word min oloi, then the Chachamim wouldn't have the ability to answer it. Anyway, the point is,
now that I'm figuring it out, what did you say about that being removed?
That Rashi says you remove it because there's no such thing difference between nala and min oloi in Loshen of Tanakh. In the Loshon of Tanakh, the word nal is used exclusively. It never uses the word minol. So with that said, on the other hand, the Yerushalmi, when it tells over the story, says it differently. That it says that the man says, "V'chi yesh sandal b'mkemenu? Do we b'chlal have sandals in our area?" And that is one of, we were just talking about a minute or two ago, that you have nowadays, we don't really use a sandal, we use a special chalitza shoe, and it's made to a certain extent like the sandals of the times of the Gemara, but it's not made out of hard leather, unlike a sandal of those times, for reasons that we don't know exactly how those sandals were constructed. So one thing that bears on that is this braisa over here and then the various gersois of it. If you say v'chiyesh sandal v'mkemenu, that would be a reason. Nowadays, people don't usually wear sandals. People wear shoes made out of soft leather. So therefore, that would be more of a reason to say that we can do that and it's considered valid, even though the Gemara is discussing over here the fact that l'chachilah you should be using a sandal. Anyway. So amauti loy. So Yossi says, I said to the old Taman Chacham, im kein ma ror a meir loymem b'chol tzav minol chalitza sekshera. Well, and that's the case. If you're telling me b'chi chol tzav minol, so then how does Reb Meir? So how does Reb Meir say that if you do chalitza with a minol, then it would be kosher? And Reb Yaakov oymem b'shmoy chol tzav minol lahatchila. And in fact, Reb Yaakov says in the name of Reb Meir that you could do chalitza with a minol even lahatchila. So in other words, the point is, so you have an opinion that says that you are allowed to use a minol l'chatchila. We're saying there's two major explanations. One is that a minol was made out of soft leather, whereas a sandal was made out of hard leather. And the other is that a minol covers the top and the bottom of the foot. Yeah, there are different pictures of chalitza shoes, yeah. So a minol covers the, so another point is that the minol covers the top and bottom of the foot, like you have nowadays. You think of a typical shoe, it has a sole that you walk on, and it has an upper that covers the upper side of your foot, and then it has a tongue over there, and then you lace it up. As opposed to a sandal would basically just cover the bottom of the foot, and then like you have it turns up a little bit on the sides in order that the shoe, in order right. that your foot doesn't fall off right. as you walk. Right. So we see that there's an opinion that says that you can use a minol l'chatchila. So again, when we have the two different lashonis, if Eliyo comes and tells us chotz in the minol shomin loy, or if he tells us ein chotz in the minol shomin loy, then that will depend on the question of nowadays, do we use a minol l'chatchila, or only do we use it b'dieven? Okay, so the Gemara says, umando omol l'chatchila loy, my timer. Now, why would the opinion that says that you don't use a minol l'chatchila, why not? To have a panser me'al, is it because the problem is that when with a regular shoe, again, it covers the top of the foot, so you have the panser, which is the upper of the shoe. The Torah uses the expression by chalitza. The Torah says v'chotza naloi me'al ragli, that she has to remove the shoe from above, from on top of his foot. So does that imply? So is the problem that when you have a minol, then you have It has a panzer. It has an upper, which covers the top of the foot. And then the laces go over that. So now they're not directly on the foot. They're not al. They're not me'al. They're me'al dime'al. They're on top of something, which is on top of something, which is on top of the foot. And you're going to say that therefore minol would be possible because when you're undoing the laces, you're not undoing something that's directly on the foot. Well, then in that case, what would there be a difference? According to the opinion that you can use it, fine. They would say, we're not worried about that. But if you're telling me that the reason why one opinion that says you can't do it b'di'evin is because...
this is 19th century.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you're going to say that the reason is that the reason why you can't use a minol lahatchila according to one opinion is because of the problem that the laces go over the top of the shoe, well, in that case, then that should be even be the evidence should be possible. Because according to that opinion, if we're concerned about the difference between me'al and me'al to me'al, then there's no lahatchila but the evidence. So no, the reason is gzeira mishum minol merupat. No, rather, the reason is loy. No, gzeira mishum minol merupat. The reason why, according to that opinion, we shouldn't use a minol is because you might end up using a shoe which is merupat. So Rashi explains merupat means that it's means that it's torn. So the problem is that the difference is Rashi, who follows his shita, that the main difference between a minol and a sandal is a minol covers the top of the foot and a sandal doesn't. Since a sandal, he agrees, a sandal is made out of hard leather. Because it's made out of such hard, stiff leather, if it breaks, you're not going to be able to tie it in such a way that it'll stay on your foot. So therefore, you're not going to bother. Nobody's going to wear a sandal merupat. On the other hand, a minol merupat is the leather is soft enough that you could tie it in an ad hoc way onto your foot and continue wearing it. So now we're concerned that you might end up using a minol merupat. And the problem is, if it doesn't hold most of the foot, then it's possible for chalitza. So therefore, that would be, according to that, a reason to passel, a reason not to passel, but to say, l'hatchila, you shouldn't use a minol, b'di'evet, if you did, and it wasn't merupat, then it'll be fine.
So those shoes that I'm looking at so what they did was they rabbanan
Let's learn the next six lines in the Gemara, and then we'll explain it a little better. Inami mishum chatzi minol, or another reason is because you might have only a half a shoe. Where again, with a sandal, there would be no such thing as a half because it's made out of hard leather, and nobody would wear a half one. But as opposed to a minol, a person might conceivably wear one that's only partial. So the Gemara says, Omar Rab. I lav de chamise la chavivi de cholatz besandol de isla shinsin. Were it not for the fact that I saw, Rav is saying, I saw Chavivi, which means my uncle, which is Reb Chiya. Now, I saw Reb Chiya supervise the chalitza, and he used a sandal, the islo shinsin. He used a sandal that has shinsin. Rashi explains, means that basically a drawstring. So you think of it, a sandal has to be kept on the foot somehow, so it doesn't slip off. So shinsin is, you have like a drawstring around it to tighten it a little bit onto the foot. Different other Rishonim explain that shinsin might be more like the holes that you have in shoes to where you put the laces through the eyes for the shoelaces. Anyway, so because I saw that Reb Chiya did that, then therefore fine, I know that that must be acceptable chalitza. Were it not for that, Rav says, I would have, if I hadn't known that, I would have said that you can only do chalitza with a sandal of a taya, which is the taya or Arab merchants, so a particular kind of sandal that they would wear, which is very tightly fitted onto the foot. And the Gemara continues, now as far as our regular sandals, which are not with shinsin and they're not a sandal of a taya, even though it has a chumauta, which is a knot around the edge to keep the foot from falling out, nevertheless, katrinan be misna, we tie some long laces to it, and we use those, and those laces are tied around the foot. This way the chalitza will be done in the best possible way. In other words, the ideal way is that you're undoing the laces and then the shoe is being taken off. Now, again, so here you have, based on these few lines and based on this whole description of minhal and sandal, is what you have. Different rishonim have many different understandings of the details of what we're saying over here. What's the difference between a sandal de taya versus a regular sandal? Where exactly is the chumarta, and so on and so forth. So then you come to the pictures that you were just showing us, Aaron, of various kinds of chalitza shoes, where they have, so the shoe itself is made out of leather, and we're going to learn on Amud Beis another detail about it, about how it's sewn together, that it's dafka sewn together also with leather. They don't use thread. They don't use regular thread in sewing it. We'll talk about that on Amud Beis. There's also the details about how exactly the sole is attached to it, so that again in a certain way it's similar to the sandals of the times of the Gemara. And then you have the schumauta, you have these knots around the edges that help keep it in place. And then you have misna, you have the long laces. So what they do is they have the yavam puts on the shoe, they wrap the laces a couple of times around his lower leg and they tie it. And then when it comes to the chalitza, then the yavama is untying that, and she's untying the knot, undoing the laces from around his feet. Yeah, she's touching him for this purpose. Yeah. So she undoes the laces. She undoes the knot. She takes off the laces from around his lower leg, and she removes the shoe. And she removes the shoe off his foot. Yeah.
Did anyone change their mind during the ceremony?
During the ceremony, basically. But anyway, let's go on. Yeah. but anyway, the point is, in other words, that yes, you look at these chalitza shoes. I mean, obviously, they have to be custom made for this purpose. You're not going to find such shoes in the regular shoe stores. But the point is that based on these few lines of the Gemara and based on some more on Amud Beis is why we have some very exacting specifications for how it's made in such a way that it will in such a way so they're not anything like all regular shoes, and they're probably not exactly like the sandal of the times of the Gemara, but they're close to that. They at least fit certain of the specifications that we're saying over here. So the leather should be, I mean, the sole of it is made out of hard leather. The upper part of it is sort of soft. That's what we were saying before, that in practice we use a minnow, but it's still
not soft enough that you would be able to fix it on the run.
Yeah, that seems to be the idea.
Right. Not hard enough.
But not hard enough that it wouldn't fit well around the foot, right? I mean, again, there's other points as well. For example, some of the Rishonim learn, based on the description of the Gemara over here and based on what we're going to have more on Amud Beis, that you have to have that another difference between a minhal and a sandal is with a minhal, the top parts overlap each other, kind of. Or if the shoe doesn't have a tongue, then the two upper parts overlap each other to cover the whole top of the foot, whereas with a sandal, not. So you have in chalitza shoes that you'll see in those pictures, they have like these, they have these wide straps that go, they fit together to the front of the foot, but they don't actually overlap each other. It's like one goes between the next one or something. That's also included in this mihadak tfei, that when it has wider straps, then it fits more tightly on the foot. Yeah. So you have those wider straps on the top. Yeah. And then you have narrower straps. Yeah, you have these wider straps that fit right above the top of the foot. And then you have further up, you have actual laces that are laced up further up the leg. Yeah. Okay, let's go on. Simen hataras yavama sandal. So the simon for the next three dinim that we're going to talk about. So first one, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, Hatoras Yevama Lashuk B'Shmitas Roiv Ha'okim. When does the Yevama become mutter to marry somebody else once most of the heel of the foot has been removed from the shoe, has been removed from the shoe. So even though the shoe has not been completely removed from the foot, nevertheless, that's still already good. The Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, if you undo the straps or the laces of a minhal or a sandal, meaning if they were unloosed by themselves, the yavama didn't do it, or if most of the foot fell out of the shoe, then it's a chalitza psula, implying only because he took it off would it be possible, hashamtehi chalitza sekshera. Implying that if she took it off, then it would be a kosher chalitza, and roiv ha regal ein roiv ha akiv loy. And the implication of the braisa is only if she took out most of the foot, not just most of the oked, most of the heel. So the Gemara says, "Loi, it's not really a distinction. Hainu roiv haregel, hainu roiv haoked." It's two ways of expressing the same thing, similar to the way Rashi on the Mishnah had explained that a sandal sheyesh loi oked means not that it has a heel, but rather that it has a sole. So in the same way over here, we're using the word oked to mean the foot as a whole. V'amai korolei roiv haregel. So why do we call it most of the foot? When once the heel is removed, then it's considered most of the foot. D'kulech chayla d'kara aloi dofis. Because the full weight of the foot, the full pressure of the foot is on the heel. In fact, that's why in Chassidus, all over the place, we use a heel as a metaphor for Kabbalah's oil. The heel doesn't understand why you're telling it to go in such and such a place and to put and to rest your whole weight on it, but it goes and follows loyally. So therefore the heel can be called roiv haregel. So the din is still valid that once you remove roiv ha'akev, then that's the equivalent of roiv ha'regel, and therefore the chalitza is kosher. L'chila, of course, she takes off the whole shoe, and in fact, the Rambam even says that after she takes off the shoe, she should throw it on the ground. And the true wonder is, where does the Rambam get that from? It's actually one of the interesting things we see. This is where we see that the Rambam follows the Zohar. So even though the Zohar was only published a generation or two after, or a couple of generations after the Rambam passed away, but the Zohar mentions in an Inyan Api Kabbalah to throw the shoe on the ground, and we see that the Rambam was following that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I thought that the Zohar was found...
It was found about 100 years later. Yeah, but yeah, let's talk about that later. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. So the Gemara says, "Misayle the Rav Yanai." So now this point supports what Rav Yanai says. The Amar Rav Yanai, "Ben shehitu hu v'shamtehi," whether he undid the laces and she removed the shoes or the shoe, or "Ben shehitirehi v'shamatu," or the other way around, she undid the laces, but he then removed it from his foot. Chalitzas a psula. Either way, the chalitza is possible. Achatatuhi v'tashmiti. She has to undo the laces and she has to remove the shoe from the foot. So that's what we're saying. In other words, that we said that the Braisa had said that a hutru ritzuris min over sandal, that if the laces come undone by themselves, then it's possible. So that's because we're saying she has to actually undo them from the foot and she has to remove the actual shoe. So the Gemara says, "Boy Rav Yanai." So now Rav Yanai has a question. Kara'asu mahu. What if instead of removing the shoe, she ripped it off his foot? She ripped open the shoe and removed it from his foot that way. Or srafatu mahu. Or what happened if she burnt the shoe off his foot? Galuya kara ba'inan. Do we require? Is the point that we need her to uncover his foot? Vahika, so good. His foot's uncovered. Oi duma chalitza ba'inan v'leko. Maybe it needs chalitza that you actually remove the shoe and the shoe is still intact v'leka and you don't have it and therefore teku. So therefore teku and therefore you shouldn't do it and if you did then it's a chalitza psula. No, I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe it is. Anyway,
does she have the power to withdraw from the chalitza?
Does she have the power to withdraw from
not,
the chalitza?
Not doing all these minhagim by not removing the shoe and not.
So if she doesn't want to do chalitza, then what is she? If she wants to do yibum instead, then we have to work it out with the yavam because if the yavam wants to do yibum as well. So in the times of the Gemara, okay, they could do that. Nowadays we don't do yibum. So practically speaking, we'd have to get her and him to agree.
It's a two-way street.
It's a two-way street, yeah. I mean, there is b'chlal, there is a bit of a machloikas among the poskim. If a woman says, you know what, I can't be bothered. I don't want yibum, I don't want chalitza, I'll just stay as I am, fine. I can't marry anybody else, I don't care. Do we allow that or do we not allow that? Do we say that nevertheless there's a mitzvah of chalitza? If we say that there's a mitzvah of chalitza, then yeah, it has to be done whether she likes it or not. Then we have to convince her, yeah. So bo min Rav Nechemya mirabba, similarly Rav Nechemya asked Rabba Shnei min olam zeh gav zeh mahu. What would happen if there were two shoes, one on top of the other? So the Gemara says, hey Chidomi, what's the scenario that you're asking about? Do you mean where she removed the shoe that was on the outside and there's still another shoe on the inside left on his foot? Obviously, that would be possible. We said before that it has to be me'al ragloi, not me'al of something else, which was me'al, and here it's one shoe on top of the other. So the answer is loy tzricha, right? But Rav Nechemya is asking, de karate le'iloyu shlafta le'tatoi. What if she ripped open the outer one, then she removed the inner one while the outer one is still on? The outer one is still there. So the outer one is loose enough that after tearing it open, she's able to remove the inside shoe and the outside shoe is still covering his foot. So my chalitza be'inin v'hoyika, now it's the opposite of Rabbi Yana's previous question. So now there is chalitza because she did remove a shoe from his foot, or maybe you need the foot to be uncovered, v'leka, and you don't have it because it's still covered by the outside shoe. So the Gemara asks, how do you have it? Do you even have such a thing? So Tosfos explains, the question is not really, is such a thing physically possible? The Gemara will often ask about things that are not physically possible because we need to know the din. But the question is, is there even a habamin that would be considered valid chalitza? People don't normally wear one shoe on top of the other. And the answer is, as a matter of fact, yes. For example, the Chachamim one time saw Rabbi Yehuda going out into the street with five pairs of slippers, one above the other. So we see that, yes, sometimes a person will wear shoes on top of other shoes. So again, since the Gemara leaves the question, the Gemara didn't say take over here, but it's still left unresolved. So therefore, again, you shouldn't do that. And if you did, then it's a chalitza psula. There is in this connection, there's also now Tosfos Chabbi Kamai brings over here that the question, what about if the Yavam is wearing socks? On the face of it, we said in the Mishnah that socks and pilya are not considered a shoe for this purpose. So therefore, if he's wearing socks and then he's wearing the shoe on top of it, there should be no problem. It's not mino agabe mino. On the other hand, the Gemara is discussing over here the question that maybe you need to expose his foot. So therefore, they say you should be that sorech lahachmir, because we don't, because we do. And therefore, in practice, that's how it's done. When they do chalitza, the yavam has his foot bare, and then he puts the chalitza shoe on his bare foot, and the yavama removes it from there. In that connection, also actually, there's also it mentions in Shulchan Aruch you have to be careful that the foot is clean, so that there's no dirt or whatever to be a chatzitza between it and the shoe. So they tell the yavam ahead of time to wash his foot before he puts on the chalitza shoe. Basically, as we go through this perek, we're going to see there's a lot of details that the Rishonim and the Achronim added in details in the Seder HaChalitza in order to be choshesh for all kinds of different opinions. Because again, since we're talking about something Daraisa over here, and as we've learned earlier in the perek, if a Yavama marries without Chalitza, then you have serious problems. So therefore, we want to make sure that the Chalitza should be kosher l'chol adeis. Therefore, for example, all those details about the shoe, therefore we're saying all these details about the yavam, about the condition of the yavam's foot, and so on and so forth. Okay, so the Gemara says, a new din, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Yavama shehigdila bein ha'achim. If the yavama grew up among the brothers, now imagine, for example, we learned earlier, we learned a few days ago that you can have a blended family where you have both the father and the mother have children from previous marriages, and now they got married and they have other children together, like we have in Rav Chiya and Rav's family.
And those are mutter, so
one from one side is mutter. So now imagine you have the Yavama grew up among the brothers. You have a blended family like that. So she was a stepsister of theirs, and they all grew up together in the same household. And later on, now she married one of the brothers, and now that brother died, and she needs chalitza. Muteresli nosel echem min achim. She would be mutter to do yibum, to actually marry one of the brothers as yibum. Ve'en choshin shemach chotza sandal echem behen. We don't have to be choshish that sometimes at one point over the years when they were living together in the same household, she may have at one time taken off the sandal of one of them, and that would be chalitza, or at least a form of chalitza, and then it would pass over for Yibum. Says Rab, we're not worried about that. So the Gemara says, "Taima d'lo chazinan." Okay, so what are you telling me? Because we didn't see her ever doing that, then therefore we're saying it's not a problem. We don't have to be choshish that it happened when we didn't see. Ha chazinan chayshinan. Does that mean that if we ever actually saw this girl taking off one of her brother's shoes, then it would be considered chalitza? V'hatanya ben sheniskaven hu v'lo niskavenihi. A braisa says whether he had kavan of chalitza and she did not. Bench and iskabne hevel and iskabne hu, or the other way around, chalitzas a psula, then it's a posel chalitza, adchi iskabner shneim ka'echad, unless they both have kavana for it. And apparently that means that we've got to know that they have kavana for chalitza. So if they didn't have kavana for chalitza, then it wouldn't be considered chalitza. So what's the problem? The answer is, hochikomer. No, because what the Braisa means is afagav dechazinon ein choshen shemakiv. What it means is that yes, even if we actually saw that she took off those shoes, then we don't have to worry that they were mechapin. So that's what Rav doesn't mean that if we never saw it happen, then we don't have to worry about it. But if we ever saw it happen, then we do need to be choshish. No, in fact, Rav does mean to keep in sync with the Braisa, that it means that even if we actually saw her at one point taking off one of her brother's shoes, we don't have to worry that constitutes chalitza in any way. But the Ikadamri, another version, is no, you're right, time of the Lechazina. Actually, you're right. It means if we never saw her taking off any of her brother's shoes, then there's not a problem. But if we ever saw her taking off one of those shoes, we do have to be choshish that maybe it constitutes a form of chalitza and therefore she'd be possible for yibum to them. Or the katana boy kavana. The braisa said we need kavana. That means in order for it to be a kosher chalitza, where then she's allowed to marry somebody else, for that you need kavana. But just taking off the shoe, even without kavana for chalitza, would be enough to passel her to the brothers. So therefore, according to that second lashon, and that is how the poskim paskin, because in general, when you have two lashonis in the Gemara, we usually paskin like the second one. So it would mean that if this yevama shegela ben achin, if she ever took off one of those shoes, and we know about it, then in fact you need passel for yibum to all of them, because that would constitute a form of chalitza. Implying that if we never saw it happen, then we don't have to be choshesh. If we saw it happen, then we say she can't do yibum with any of the brothers. Then she'd have to do chalitza. Then yeah. Real chalitza.
But she can marry again.
Right.
I'm thinking maybe she can't even do chalitza.
No. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Sandal atofu bepishtan ein chelzen bay. A sandal that was sewn with linen or any other kind of thread, you can't use for chalitza. Now, Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it means that it has a lining of pishdan on the inside. You think of a shoe, has a lining on the inside. Most of the Rishonim disagree with Rashi's explanation because they say that the Gemara is going to discuss later at the bottom of the Amud. We're going to talk about a sandal that's made out of wood and covered with leather, and we're going to talk about whether it's kosher or not. So if that's kosher, how much more so a shoe that's basically a sandal that's basically made out of leather and has a cloth lining wouldn't be possible. So rather, Rashi gives a second explanation, which most of the Rishonim agree with, that it means that if you used linen thread to sew the shoe together, the pieces of a shoe have to be sewn together. And so here, if you use linen thread. So this is why in those pictures of chalitza shoes that you were showing us before, the upper and the sole are sewn together with leather threads in order to be,
Yeah, we've noticed that.
So Shinema, because the Pasuk says, V'on olech tochash, The Pasuk says, Hashem says about the Jewish people in the Midbar, I gave you shoes of tachash skin. So therefore it means that shoes, by definition, have to be made out of leather. So the Gemara says, V'eim a tachash ein midyachrin aloi. Maybe then in that case, you would say that a shoe is defined, it's defined as a shoe only if it's made out of tachash leather. The answer is na'al riba. The answer is, on the other hand, in the parasha of Yibum, it says a couple of times the word na'aloi. It says v'cholta naloi me'al ragloi. So the fact that it says afterward base chalutz on noal. So the extra word over there teaches us that any kind of nal is good.
So question is, was a rainbow colored unicorn?
Yeah, something like. So the Gemara says e naal naal riba afila kol milinami. Nu, if you're going to say there's a riboy, then it should mean anything, any material. And the answer is imken tachash mayani. Like, fine, but then what would you be learning from the word tachash? The fact that it says v'an olech tachash has to be teaching us something. So therefore, we learn it has to be like the tachash in that it's made out of leather. However, it can be made out of. It doesn't have to be dafka tachash leather. It can be any other kind. Tosfos brings, on the other hand, the tachash was a kosher animal. Does that imply that the leather for a chalitza shoe has to be from a kosher animal? So Tosfos says, Benatam says yes, and the other Balei Tosfos say no.
So the unicorn with cloven hooves.
So it was a kosher animal, yeah. In general, you have a concept called loy huchshu l'malachas shemayim ela tahurin bovad. Only kosher animals are suitable for the malacha of Hashem, including for the mishkan, including for tefillin and whatever. So therefore, yes, the tachash, if they use it. We learned about it in Shabbos, mainly. In Shabbos, mainly. Anyway, let's go on a little further. Who shall order trace Yosef shall say or mahu? What happens if the shoe itself is made out of leather, but the trace Yosef are made out of hair? Rashi explains, Tres Yosef means it's straps. So the straps are made out of hair or some other material. There's different other explanations among Rishonim. Among them is that Tracy Yosef are the loops through which the straps go. Anyway, what would be the din? Omalei, so Rav says, Mila Korin Be'van Olech Tochash. Nu, wouldn't the word Van Olech Tochash still apply? Because the shoe is basically made out of leather. So he asks, Yehochi Kulashol Seir Nami. Well, by that logic, then couldn't the whole shoe be made out of goat hair and it would still be kosher? And he answers him, Hahu Krako Mikri. In that case, it wouldn't be called a Na'al or a Minol. It would be called Krako or Kurka, Rashi says, which means exactly that, a shoe made out, it's like a slipper more. It's not a real shoe. Okay, I guess we'll stop here and we'll continue on Shabbos. Best of Shem, yeah.